The next case in our calendar is 07-1760 and 07-1762, Fred Lager, Administrator, versus Ryan Miller, Gonzalez. We have two justices who've recused themselves. Justice Lanzinger has recused herself in this case. We're very pleased to have sitting in place of Justice Lanzinger, Judge Penelope Cunningham, who sits in the First District Court of Appeals. And for Justice Cupp, we have sitting Judge Lynn Slaby, who sits in the Court of Appeals in the Ninth Appellate District. Ms. Kimbler.
Thank you, Chief Justice. May it please the Court and opposing counsel, my name is Joyce Kimbler. I represent Nationwide Insurance in this matter. We are here to address the specific issue of whether, as the terms are used in the policy of insurance, the phrases for bodily injury and because of bodily injury, whether there is any rational distinction between the two. In construing a contract involving uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage in Ohio, we must first consider the interaction between the contract, the statute, and the relevant case law. In this particular case, it requires looking at the meanings of the terms because of bodily injury and for bodily injury in light of Revised Code 3937.18, as well as the various appellate districts seeking to define these terms. It is the position of the defendant, as set forth in the brief, that the relevant provision of RC 3937.18 to be applied in this matter is Senate Bill 97, effective October 31, 2001. This is because the original two-year renewal, or what you might call the Wolf renewal, occurred during the pendency or during Senate Bill 297, and one of the provisions of Senate Bill 267, is that it allowed the insurance companies to incorporate amendments to the statute as they became effective. And because the last then renewal prior to the accident occurred under Senate Bill 97, we believe that that is the Senate version of the statute that should be applied.
Counsel, you're these folks whose daughter was killed, and you read through your policy, I mean, I just listened to your opening statement. It's articulate. It's probably 100% correct as to what you look to. But if you're a policyholder and you even do due diligence and try to read down through your policy, how are you going to know that coverage is excluded?
Well, Your Honor, this Court has consistently charged policyholders with knowledge of what is contained in their contract. And in the state of Ohio, you're expected to read the contract, and if you don't understand the contract, to ask questions concerning that contract. In this contract,
okay, so if you read it and ask questions and you ask it of your agent, how's your agent going to know the – I mean, you just articulated you've got to look to the statute, you've got to understand – this case and that case, your agent can't answer those questions.
Hopefully, if your agent couldn't answer those questions, your agent would refer you to someone who would answer those questions. However, in this particular matter, there is no evidence that those questions were ever asked.
Okay, but we also have a competing doctrine that's in play in this case. The Court of Appeals decided in favor of the insureds on the basis of What doctrine?
Stare decisis precedens.
Well, but it is that the policy language is confusing, right? Isn't that what they concluded?
Well, it is interesting that you bring up that rationale that's used by the Court of Appeals in this case, because what has happened is that the Court of Appeals in this case looked back at an earlier decision in Hall versus Nationwide, which looked back at earlier decisions in Newsom and Lansdowne, and you went back through a whole series of courts that simply said, well, we've already decided this, and nobody ever sat down and analyzed the underlying rationale that led from the earliest cases back in 1993 up to the Lager decision in 2006. And the reason that that's a problem is it relates back to my opening statement, which is the fact that in Ohio, the way that we define terms, both in the contracts and in the statute, is constantly evolving. And you can't simply go back to 1993 and 1994 cases and use the same type of analysis that the courts used back then, because it was in an entirely different setting. It was in the setting of the uninsured, underinsured motorist law being a remedial statute. And as this court recognized in Hedges, that is no longer the state of the law in Ohio. We no longer have to look at this as a remedial statute, so that the courts have to look and determine, is there an ambiguity and should we be finding coverage? Instead, we have come to a point in time when it is no longer a remedial statute, and we look at the clear and unambiguous words of the contract.
Well, I'm almost lost. Imagine the poor policyholder.
I'm sure the policyholder would be asking me very astute questions, as you will now, Your Honor. How can I clarify this matter for you?
Yes. And my question is, how can I buy in? Was there a way to protect themselves?
Oh, yes.
And in fact,
it would have been very simple for them to have protected themselves in this matter. In this matter, the loggers were policyholders of Nationwide under the $300,000 in coverage that they now seek to access. Sarah Logger only recently had a vehicle either she purchased or was purchased for her, and instead of putting that vehicle on their policy, which would have alleviated all of these problems, the Loggers instead chose to purchase a separate policy with lower limits. Why that decision was made, I do not know, but the fact of the matter is the effect of that decision was to then create a vehicle that Sarah was operating, which was not insured under the $300,000 policy. If they simply would have put that vehicle on this policy, we wouldn't have any of those problems.
Thank you.
Certainly. It is anticipated that the plaintiff would like to have this analyzed instead of under Senate Bill 97, under Senate Bill 267. And because this is a matter in which it doesn't matter really which version of the statute you use, whether 97 or 267, we will look at Senate Bill 267 for the analysis. It is complained that Nationwide in the coverage section uses the term because of bodily language, and in the exclusion section uses the term for bodily injury, and that somehow the use of these two different terms creates an ambiguity. But if you look at the statute as enacted by the Ohio legislature, it is clear that these two terms were used interchangeably. In 393718, as found in Senate Bill 267, in A, they talk about for bodily injury. In A1, they talk about because of bodily injury. Then you go down to J, the section that gives you the authority to exclude the bodily injury, and they use the term for bodily injury. So it is clear that the legislature was using these terms interchangeably.
But Appley, as you know, has given us, offered us situations, circumstances in which those words are different, those terms are used differently.
Well, I think that what this court has to recognize is that because the legislature appears to have used those terms interchangeably, if this court does not find that there is no rational distinction between the terms, then you're creating a whole situation where if you say because of bodily injury and for bodily injury are not interchangeable, then you go and apply those definitions to the statute, you're going to end up with a statute that makes no sense. You're going to end up with a statute where you say, well, we're telling you that you can sell policies for this, but you can't sell policies for that, and if you sell a policy for this, you can't exclude that. And it really makes nonsense out of the statute if you don't use the terms interchangeably. And I think that that's the context.
Why do you need both terms if they're used interchangeably, meaning essentially the same thing? Why not keep one term so there's not a suggestion of ambiguity?
It is my belief, if you're asking me why the legislature did not use the same term.
Why the company wouldn't, to make it so we don't have cases like this.
There's a very good reason why the company didn't. The company's language tracks the legislature's language.
Right.
The company's language grants coverage, just like 393718A1 says, because of bodily injury. And the company's exclusion is just like 393718J, which uses the term for bodily injury. So the language chosen by the company was the language that tracked the statute, and that's why you have the two different terms used, at least at the time that particular policy was written.
That would usually be a pretty safe argument because we assume the legislature uses words advisedly, but sometimes entities or people have to have to use words that are perhaps more precise than the General Assembly has to avoid an issue of ambiguity, particularly in an insurance contract where most people are sort of befuddled by them anyway when they get them.
I think that in the state of Ohio, where uninsured, underinsurance motors law is particularly created by statute, I think that an insurance company is very wise if they choose to incorporate the language of the statute into their policy to make sure that they are complying with both the specific intent of the legislature and the purpose of the policy. So I think that in this particular case, what Nationwide chose to do was a wise decision to follow the language as set forth by the legislature.
So when you get to what the legislature has done in providing coverage, and the policy does, as you point out, track the statute, the policy indicates that the company will pay for damages, and then it says including derivative claims, because of bodily injury. That would seem to include a wrongful death action, because a wrongful death action is not a derivative claim, but it is still there. Difficulty I have is when you get to the exclusionary clause, the other owned auto exclusion, it says the coverage does not apply to anyone for bodily injury or derivative claims. Well, the wrongful death claim isn't derivative, and it's not a claim for bodily injury.
But in fact,
so it's not excluded.
But in fact, it is a claim for bodily injury as that term is defined by the policy.
Isn't it a bereavement claim on behalf of the next of kin?
The bodily injury is defined in the policy as including death. The phrase that you just read said to anyone for bodily injury. So that would be to anyone for anything arising out of death.
If it said arising out of it, I'd agree with you, but it doesn't. It says for bodily injury.
Right, and bodily injury by definition in the policy includes death. So when it says to anyone, you can substitute the word wrongful death or death in there for bodily injury.
If it said wrongful death, I might agree with you.
Pardon me?
If it said wrongful death, I might agree with you. But that's a specific cause of action, is it not?
Anyone cannot bring any other cause of action. There is no other cause of action other than a wrongful death action that can arise out of death.
Well, counsel, I focused more on bodily injury as opposed to the out of or the for, because I think that, at least for me, was more helpful. Does it make any difference, as is argued in the Appellee's brief, that bodily injury is defined not in the UIM contract provision, but in the general definition section to include within the meaning of bodily injury, physical injury, or resultant death of any person which results directly from a motor vehicle accident, which is what you just explained. However, they seem to distinguish it, saying that, well, that was bodily injury for the general definition, but there was not a bodily injury definition in the UIM, is there ever been that type of a distinction made?
No, Your Honor. The whole reason it's in the general definition section is because the general definitions include every other provision in the policy. Otherwise, what you would be doing is redefining the word every single time that you had a different type of coverage, and then people would say that you're creating ambiguity because you are redefining the word for property damage or redefining the word for medical payments coverage. But instead, you've got one definition found in the general definition section, and it's applicable for all coverages as found throughout the policy. Looking at the case history, again, that was relied upon by the Court of Appeals in this matter, what the Court of Appeals said was they looked to Hall, and Hall said, well, we've already made this decision. We looked back at back at Newsom and Leonard. Well, these were cases that were decided back in 1993 and 1994 under an entirely different statutory theme and also under an entirely different philosophy on the Supreme Court and the courts of appeals at the times. As I've indicated previously, at that point in time, back in 1993 and 1994, it was assumed that UIUM statutes were remedial in nature, and what you needed to do was you needed to find a reason to give coverage if it wasn't clear from the policy that there was no coverage for some other reason. You also had a lot of things going back and forth about were certain types of exclusions even valid. And subsequent to 1993 and 1994, when these decisions were made, the legislature passed House Bill 261 specifically to overcome the Supreme Court's holding in Martin versus Midwestern, which said that other auto-owned exclusions were not proper. So now we have a legislative pronouncement saying, no, we want everyone to know that this type of exclusion, the other-owned auto exclusion, which is at issue in this case, we have specifically allowed that to be included in the policies of insurance. That would mean that the cases relied on by Hall, which were then the cases relied on by Lager, would no longer be persuasive in this particular situation. I think that what is persuasive in this situation is Justice Langsager's dissent in Kotelazarek, in which which was almost identical to the situation we have here. In that particular case, Michelle Kotelazarek wasn't insured under the State Farm policy because she was a resident relative, as Sarah Lager isn't insured under the Nationwide policy because she is a resident relative. Both were killed while operating a vehicle that she herself owned but was not covered under her parents' policy. In the dissent in that case, Justice Lanziger found the other-owned auto exclusion to be valid and enforceable. And in doing so...
I need to sum up, Counselor. Your red light's been on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Rock.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. Good morning. Mark Twain once said that the difference between the almost right word and the right word is really a large matter. It's the difference between the lightning bug and the lightning. In this case, it's really not as difficult as it might sound. We have a case where for bodily injury, we submit is the almost right word or phrase that's plugged into this exclusion or other own auto exclusion policy by the appellant. We do not dispute that for and because of or for bodily injury and because of bodily injury may be interchangeable in certain contexts. We also, however, submit that they are not, those words or phrases are not interchangeable in all contexts, especially in this particular context. I think what is probably the most instructive thing, and I think Justice O'Donnell hit on it just a little bit in terms of the exclusion clause and the use of the word for bodily injury and for or derivative claims, is that that particular clause is stated in the disjunctive. They use the word or to separate for bodily injury against or derivative claims. If we take the position of appellant, and that for bodily injury actually should mean, for this interpretation, because of bodily injury, and if we take the case of Tomlinson and some other cases cited in Tomlinson versus Slonick, that derivative claims mean because of bodily injury, then what we have in that exclusion clause is a lot of surplusage, and that surplusage is the word or phrase or derivative claims. It means nothing anymore. You don't need it. Because of bodily injury, if in fact for bodily injury means that, would subsume derivative claims. If, because it's a function word, that simply is another way of saying that it's the intent is to indicate an alternative between two different or unlike things. That it is, or is used or indicated the phrases are not intended to mean the same thing. I would submit that for bodily injury means just that. It doesn't mean because of. It means for bodily injury, and it means to include also derivative claims which are not for bodily injury. I want to deviate a little bit because this argument I think is very instructive as well and similar to the disjunctive use of this language. I really believe, and if we take the case of Hall versus Nationwide, which is the same, very same policy that's in this case, and the very same defendant or appellant that's in this case, and the very same relevant facts that were before the court in Hall versus Nationwide, And if you look at the arguments that Nationwide made in that particular case as to what this exclusion clause actually meant, they argued in that case that or derivative claims, or derivative claims, the word derivative claim, was taking care of wrongful death claims. In other words, wrongful death was subsumed in the category of derivative claims. We know that that's not correct, that derivative claims are not wrongful death claims, but that's what they argued in that case. And I would submit they argued it in that case because they really believed when they put this language in the exclusion clause that they were covering wrongful death by the use of or derivative claims, which they conclude wrongfully, I think. If we did not have the very same defendant in those arguments in Hall versus Nationwide, I wouldn't be bringing that up, but I think it's certainly relevant to the intent when they drafted this exclusion clause that they had when they put in for bodily injury and or derivative claims. In other words, for bodily injury means just that, for bodily injuries, for the bodily injuries of Sarah Lager, for any survivorship claims that she may have had prior to her demise, and certainly for any four bodily injuries, physical injury, or resulting death that the parents might have had if they were in a car, if they had sustained physical injury. That's what I truly believe the intent was when they wrote the policy. Since Hall was decided in 2005, which was 2 years after Sarah's death in this case, Nationwide is not arguing that anymore. And what they're arguing and what they believe, I think, that they have to argue now is that four bodily injury includes because of bodily injury, and that's why I think we are where we are right now. If we're going to give meaning to the contract, and if we're going to, in the exclusion clause specifically, we have to try to give all of the words in that exclusion clause some reasonable meaning if we can do so. And I would submit that if we use because of instead of for, we can't do that. We can't give any meaning to or derivative claims. We have to white it out. And I don't think this court, based on the case law, should do that or can do that. That's not the only example, and I've also stated in my brief many other parts of this UM contract that are in exclusion clauses, specifically the same exclusion clause, where they, just a few paragraphs away in the B2 section of that clause, use the words arising out of bodily injury, where a few short paragraphs prior they used the words for bodily injury. And I would submit, and they've even suggested in their brief, citing Thomason versus Slonick again, that for bodily injury means arising out of bodily injury. And if that's the case, it would have been sufficient throughout that particular exclusion to just use the word for to make it simple, for bodily injury, if in fact that's what it means. And I would submit they didn't do that because that's not what it meant. That wasn't the intent. The limitation section is another good example in the UM policy, the UM policy itself, that is replete with what I would think to be surplusage. In those two or three paragraphs that I've cited in my brief, they use the words for bodily injury again, and then they go on and talk about including death, all claims resulting from or arising out of, any claim for loss of consortium or injury to the relationship, and the all-inclusive any and all other claims. My point would be, why do you need those other explanations if, in fact, for bodily injury means what you actually are arguing today that it means? And my suggestion would be that you would not. You would stick to for bodily injury. They didn't do that. Appellant's argument has changed from their arguments in the trial court on what I think to be some very relevant things. I don't want to spend a lot of time on the issue of what particular statute applies in this case or version of 393718 because I don't really think it means any difference if you look at the provisions of that statute as applicable to this case, whether it's 267, Senate Bill 267, or House Bill 261. The exclusion clause in brought about by the amendments of 97 really only added a sentence that's not relevant here. But I do want to point out that if you look at the record in this case from the trial court, you'll find that it was the suggestion of the appellant and argued by the appellant that the version of the statute that applied was actually not 97, Senate Bill 97, but actually House Bill 261. They argued that throughout the motions for summary judgment that they filed and their reply in response to our motion for summary judgment. I could cite specific, I'll just cite in the record number 46 of the trial court docket, which was the reply and response brief on page 3. Also on page 4, the same response brief of the appellant, I quote, this automobile accident is subject to the language in ORC 393718 as amended on September 3, 1997. They now argue the applicability of Senate Bill 97. Those issues were never briefed by us because we weren't allowed to brief them because there wasn't an issue. There was nothing to brief. The first mention of Senate Bill 97 in this particular case is in their reply brief, filed in this case, the reply merit brief, that, of course, we were not able to respond to. That's the first time I saw it, and I invite this court and the appellant to demonstrate anything in the record in the trial court or even the Court of Appeals that would indicate the applicability of Senate Bill 97. I've cited some supplemental authorities 10 days ago in this case, specifically the second supplement that I filed, which I think was just on Monday, for the proposition that that argument as to which is applicable has been waived. The trial court was never able to develop the record as to which statute applied. In fact, the opinion of the trial court on two occasions, one on the motions for summary judgment and as well as the one on the motion for reconsideration and 60B motion, specifically mentioned House Bill 261. It was apparent to everybody, including the appellant, because they brought it up and raised it, that the trial court was actually looking at 261. And they didn't appeal that issue. They didn't file a motion for reconsideration on that issue or a 60B motion on that issue. Now they argue for the first time Senate Bill 97. Now, having said all that, what is the distinction? 393718I, which is the enabling exclusion clause enacted by Senate Bill 97, and I'll argue that. It used to be 261 under House Bill 261 and House Bill or Senate Bill 267, that enabling provision for the exclusion clause used to be subsection J. But in any event, it hasn't changed. That's relevant here. That reads, and I quote, any policy of insurance may include terms and conditions, may include terms and conditions that preclude coverage for bodily injury or, in the disjunctive, death suffered by an insured. They are arguing that they've effectively tracked that language in their policy. And the way they argue that is by saying that they put for bodily injury in the exclusion clause, but they don't have to say or death or anything even sounding like a wrongful death claim in the exclusion clause itself because they've covered it in the definition of bodily injury. And the way they suggest that they cover it are the words bodily injury means physical injury, sickness or disease, or resultant death. Death resulting from physical injury. And now they say that we've included, when we put bodily injury in the exclusion clause and say for bodily injury, that definition, resultant death, you can plug that in the exclusion clause. We've covered the language that the legislature says you can exclude, which is or death or, as I interpret that, wrongful death. It's not bodily injury, so it must be wrongful death. Now, that's, a different argument than what the appellants argued in the Court of Appeals, or rather in the trial court. And I think that's very instructive as to what they believe the intent of this exclusion clause to be. Because in that case, they argued extensively that the definition of bodily injury in the policy does not pertain to Fred and Kathy Lager's wrongful death claims. It pertains only to Sarah Lager's claims for bodily injury. And I'll cite the court to trial court docket number 30, also 46, and 30, which is the reply and response briefs, where they specifically say neither Frederick nor Kathy sustained bodily injuries because they weren't in the accident, which is true. They say that neither parents had a bodily injury, which is true. They say the policy is restricted to situations in which insureds suffer bodily injury or death themselves. And Fred and Kathy Lauger did not. What's more instructive is my exhibit that I attached to my motion for summary judgment, which was my exhibit 3, which is a letter from the claims adjuster, who specifically said that Fred and Kathy Lauger's claims are not covered in the definition of wrongful death. And she even cited the specific bodily injury definition, said they don't have any wrongful death claims. So now the argument is that or wrongful death, or rather death claims, are in the bodily injury definition. That's why we didn't put it in the exclusion clause itself. But they didn't put it in the exclusion clause itself, and now they're arguing some inconsistent intent that now they're trying to resurrect the bodily injury definition and say, oh, by the way, that pertains to the wrongful death claims of Fred and Kathy Lauger.
Counsel, you like the outcome of the Court of Appeals. Do you agree with their analysis of how they
in got my
that?
Case, in this
Your
case, I agree with the analysis, certainly. Certainly love the outcome.
That's clear.
And I think it's a good outcome, and I think it's the right outcome. And I've said extensively how I feel TUI does not apply, and I'm not going to have time to get into all of that. The result here is not absurd, because the statute enables you to say to exclude or wrongful death or bodily injury. You could do either one. You can include things in coverages. I see my time is almost up. If you want to do that as well. So it's not absurd for an insurance company, especially when you have competing insurance companies trying to get business, to make their policies a little bit more attractive in certain contexts, certain situations, to their potential policyholders to say, hey, we cover this, but we're not going to cover that, but they don't cover that, but we cover this.
Actually, your time is up when the red light
comes on. I thought I'd go back. I thought I then had another 39. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Kimbler, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
The appellee did a very nice job of saying what is our position in this case, and that is that bodily injury claims do include wrongful death claims. There is no other claim that can be made arising out of the death of a person but for a wrongful death claim, and we would ask this Court to find that there is no difference between because of bodily injury and for bodily injury. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The Marshal, please adjourn court.
All right. Here's